Turn to Proverbs 6 and verse 8. We're still learning from the ant here. And verse 8, I'll just read verses 6 through 8, I suppose. Proverbs 6, 6. Go to the ant, thou sluggard, consider her ways and be wise, which having no guide, overseer, or ruler, provideth her meat in the summer, and gathereth her food in the harvest. So we want to look at that verse 8, that the ant provides her meat in the summer and gathers her food in the harvest. And she does so, as we see there in verse 7, without any guide, overseer, or ruler. She provides for her necessities. This is interesting. The definition of provide here is it is to prepare, get ready, or arrange something beforehand. It says now rare. But it actually uses the Coverdale Bible of 1535, and it uses this verse, in the summer she provideth her meat and gathereth her food in the harvest. So this would actually be the definition to be used here, and it makes a lot of sense in this context, that to provide in this case is to prepare, get ready, or arrange something beforehand. Because if you think about it, especially if you lived on a farm, the summer would be spent providing for the food in the sense of preparing and getting ready to harvest, right? So it actually does make sense. And then also provide means to equip or fit out a person, etc., with what is necessary for a certain purpose, to furnish or supply with something implied. And that's typically how we think of provide, to furnish or supply with something that is necessary whenever we're providing food or clothing or housing or whatever it might be. And the definition even goes on to say there in the quote from 1628, to provide or furnish with a lodging. So this is serious business for us Christians, to provide for ourselves and our families, as it says in 1 Timothy 5 and verse 8. 1 Timothy 5, 8. This is just as important of a tenet of the faith as really anything else is, as you'll see here. 1 Timothy 5, 8 says, but if any provide not for his own, and especially for those of his own house, he hath denied the faith and is worse than an infidel. So if you had a person that just refused to work and, you know, their family was just starving or something, like that would be an excludable offense, right? I mean, we're worse than an infidel if you just refuse to work and will not provide for those in your care. Now, in this country, this is becoming more and more prevalent. I found a statistic here that at least half of the people in this country are not providing for themselves and their families, but are relying on the government to do it, at least to one extent or the other. And this is actually from an article in 2012, so it's quite old, really, and they're citing 2011, so we're really talking about 10 years ago here. It says, this is from the Washington Post, who receives government benefits in 6 charts. It says, in 2011, about 49% of the population lived in a household where at least one member received a direct benefit from the federal government. A big chunk of these households are retirees, and about 27% households, and that's not a typo I checked, should be 27% of households, benefited from a means-tested poverty. So you're talking 50% at least of people that are receiving a benefit of some kind from the government today. And, you know, that's concerning, and that was 10 years ago, and I imagine that it hasn't gotten any better in the last 10 years. So from this verse, we see that the ant provides her own meat. And meat is food in general, anything used as nourishment for men or animals, usually solid food in contradistinction to drink. So in other words, the ant provides for her food. And the ant works to eat, right? And so must we. And as we saw, I think it was in the last study, we looked at 2 Thessalonians 3 and verse 10, that if a man would not work, neither shall he eat. 2 Thessalonians 3:10 says, for even when we were with you, this we commanded you, that if any would not work, neither should he eat. So if you have a person that could work but just refuses to or something, then he's going to be, he shouldn't eat. And, you know, when you have, there's a lot of people, like in this town, that are on welfare. I'm just guessing. I didn't look up the numbers. I don't know if I could have even found it. But if you drive around this town, you can just tell that there's a lot of people in this town that are on welfare. And I just from driving the bus, I wasn't on a town route, but whenever I would drive a route in town, and you'd be picking up a little preschooler, and both mom and dad or whoever they were are there dropping her off, and it's like, yeah, you can both drop her off because you ain't working, right? And these are young people.
I mean, I think Excelsior's worse than some of the surrounding communities by far. It's got a reputation for it. Yeah. It seems to attract them for some reason.
Yeah, I could tell that just from living here a short time and just looking around.
We'll go for a drive sometime. I'll show you some neighborhoods that will blow your mind in this town.
Yeah. I don't know why that is, but northeast. Northeast. Oh, okay. Oh, like up in like Excelsior Village?
No, there's a whole bunch of HUD east.
Oh, east, other.
There's a whole bunch of HUD residences up there. When I drove a bus up there sometimes, that's nasty up there.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That was a long time ago, but it has not got better.
No, and I was hearing this when I was young. Somebody said, I don't know where it came from, but somebody told me that there was somebody in New Jersey that knew to go to Excelsior Springs. I don't know.
Oh, to get on welfare?
I remember the story. Yeah, I don't know. And that was so many years ago.
Wow.
It has to do with the availability of people that know how to get you help.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And there's the Good Samaritan Center and Need and some places like that.
Yeah, it's like, sadly, the places that are set up to help the poor end up creating a lot more of them. Mm-hmm. And, yeah. You know, it says in Proverbs 19:15 that an idle man should suffer hunger. Proverbs 19:15. It says, slothfulness casteth into a deep sleep, and an idle soul shall suffer hunger. So the ant provideth her food, her meat in the summer, and gathereth her food in the harvest. So having provided her food in the summer, now the ant gathers it. And that really makes sense when you look at that definition of provide, where it means to prepare and get ready. Right? So she prepares and gets it ready in the summer and then gathers it in the harvest. To gather is to bring things together, to collect from different quarters into one mass or place, to acquire by such means to amass, also to gather together. This is exactly what farmers would do. In those days, and in these days, for that matter, you provide your food, provide for your, you get ready in the summer, in other words, and then you go and you gather up all that you provided in the summer, all the seeds that you planted and watered and nourished, then you gather them all together and bring them into the barn. Harvest is the third of the four seasons of the year, the autumn. It is the season for reaping and gathering in the ripened grain. So provision for food is made in the summer and gathering is done in the harvest. And so the sluggard can learn from the ant about when it is crucial to work during the year. So as with a lot of the Bible, there is like a direct application, and then there's a more broad application that we can do. So the first one would be a direct application, like when should a person work during the calendar year? And we can learn this from the ant. So it's necessary to work when the weather's nice, before cold weather sets in, when it's hard or impossible to work, obviously. Work must be done in the early spring of the year if a bountiful crop is to be reaped in the harvest. So you got to get working early in the year. And if you don't do that, like I talked about last time, then you'll end up not doing so well in the end of the year whenever the harvest comes. Proverbs 20 and verse 4 says, a sluggard will not plow by reason of the cold, therefore shall he beg and harvest and have nothing. So it's necessary to start early in the spring, and then work through the year. And this is especially important for a farmer, obviously, or for other people in seasonal occupations, which I'll talk about here in just a second. So the work must continue through the summer months in preparation for the harvest. And this is what the ants do. They're wise, and they prepare their meat in the summer. Proverbs 30 and verse 25. It says, the ants are a people not strong, yet they prepare their meat in the summer. They get it ready. To prepare means to put beforehand into a suitable condition for some action, to set in order previously for some purpose, to get ready, make ready, put in readiness, to fit out or equip. So summer is the time for preparing and getting ready, in other words, getting ready to reap the harvest. And then we have autumn, or the harvest. This is the most important time of year to labor, because it is then that the fruits of a man's work will be reaped, which is the result of all the hard work that he put in starting in the spring. So the ant prepares and gets her food ready in the summer in expectation of the harvest and the coming winter. And in the harvest, the food is gathered and brought together to be kept safe until it's needed in the winter. So not many of us are farmers, and we're not actually gathering our food. I mean, if you have a garden, you are. So, I mean, in a sense, we do that. We work hard, and you know, you get planting early when you need to in the spring. Then you weed and water during the summer. You're preparing it, and then you harvest it in the fall. And then, if you're not going to waste it, a lot of work has to be done with canning or drying or whatever you have to do to put it up. And, you know, we do that. I think probably most of us, most people, I think, do it more for fun than anything else, and maybe for some fresh food, but they're not really relying on it to actually live or survive. But I do think it's a good idea in our day and age to have a storage of food and supplies and money laid up in your house in case of an emergency or a layoff or a natural disaster, anything like that. And I've told you this for a long time, and I think most of you have done it, which is great. Having food laid up in the house is a good idea. And money too. You know, I think 3 to 6 months of living expenses having laid up is a good idea, just in case. You never know what could happen. And if you doubt that, just think back to 2020. You never know what can happen, right? There can be very unexpected things that happen. That's one thing I've certainly learned from this year. So wise men will gather in the summer and harvest, but fools will sleep in the harvest and cause shame to themselves and others. Proverbs 10 and verse 5. Proverbs 10 and verse 5. It says, he that gathereth in summer is a wise son, but he that sleepeth in harvest is a son that causeth shame. You can imagine if you planted a garden, did all that work in the summertime, and then it comes time to start picking all of your vegetables, and you're just like, I'm just tired. I'm just gonna sleep. That would be a shameful thing, obviously. So once winter sets in, it's too late to work, and then one must live on whatever you produced and saved throughout the year. And so this exhortation here is especially important for farmers, which most of us are not, but also for seasonal occupations such as paving crews, concrete crews, excavation crews. You think about JP, like if he was not being like the ant and working hard as soon as the weather breaks in the spring and working hard all year right up until the absolute last day that he can possibly work, putting up all that money to get through the winter and to get his employees, how many of them are on salary through the winter, if he wasn't doing that, he'd be out of business like the first year, right? He'd be toast. So I'm sure if he probably never has read Proverbs 6, I suppose, but he figured it out without reading it, because it is common sense, obviously. But then we can also learn a more broad application of this, and that is when it is important to work in the course of one's life. So if we look at the seasons representing time periods of life, we can also learn some things. So the spring is the time of life. So the springtime of life is when a person is just entering his working years. He's just getting started. And at this time in life, it would be the time to determine what your talents and aptitudes are, the skills that God's given you, and then begin to get an education or learn some kind of a trade to develop those abilities. So that would be the part, you know, when you're a teenager, you're in your 20s, you're just starting out, the spring of life. And if you get off to a stunted start in the spring of life, then you're going to have a harder time whenever it comes, you know, to the harvest, because you just haven't had as many years working and getting built up in skills, as other people have. So it's good to get a good start. And then the summertime of life is when a man starts into his career and he's in growth mode. And during this time, he becomes more knowledgeable and productive and continues to increase his income. And this is the time to start saving money and laying up wealth. Because now you're really starting to be able to make some money, right? You're not in your prime yet, but you are. Your education's over, your training's over, and now it's work time. And then you have the autumn or the harvest. And in the harvest time of life, a man is at his peak career. He's got a lot of knowledge, a lot of experience, and his productive capacity is at its max. He's still able to work and use his talents that he's spent a lifetime acquiring. And all of the planting and watering and weeding that he has spent years doing is now paying off with a bountiful harvest at this time of life. He's making the most money of his life, and his expenses should be at the lowest point in his life, having all of his debt paid off and having an empty nest where all the kids are grown and out of the house. And now is the time where you can really reap the reward of a lifetime of labor and work and save as much money as possible while you still can work. It's like Jesus taught in John 9 and verse 4 that we have to work while it is day because the night cometh when no man can work. John 9 and verse 4. I must work the works of him, Jesus said. I must work the works of him that sent me while it is day. The night cometh when no man can work. And I think about this verse in my own ministry, and I really want to work while it's day. Right now, it is day. And hopefully for me, it's going to be daylight for a long time. But at my age, it's daylight. I mean, I've got lots of energy and youth, and I really want to do as much as I possibly can, that because someday I won't be able to if I live long enough. And then you have the winter time in life. And the winter time of life is when a man is now beyond his working years. He's old, he's physically incapable of working, and at this point he should have a large store of wealth laid up so that he can live off of it for the rest of his life so that he doesn't have to be a burden on somebody else. So that's the spring, summer, harvest, and winter of life. And we can learn from the ant about the importance of providing that in the summer and then reaping in the harvest and then getting us through the winter of life. And Americans desperately need to hear this message and learn from the wise ant, because the vast majority of Americans have little to nothing saved from retirement. And I'm going to read you here an article that I just saw the other day. It was just like perfect timing. I was just having to be looking through Zero Hedge, and I saw this article. Or I saw an article that linked to this article, because this one's a couple of years old. But this was on Zero Hedge. It's called Retirement Crisis. The typical working American has nothing saved for retirement. So the article says, a startling new report issued by the nonprofit National Institute on Retirement Security found that despite the, quote, recovery, unquote, of the last decade, leading to all-time highs in the stock market, the savings levels of Americans who seek to retire are, quote, deeply inadequate, unquote. In fact, the median retirement account balance among working individuals was found to be $0. Now you think, how can the median retirement savings of Americans be zero? You think that's impossible. How can the average be zero? You have to understand the difference between mean and median. Does anybody know what the difference between mean and median is?
Median's in the middle and mean is average. Like, take it all and divide it by however many.
Yes,
you did.
That's exactly right. So for example, let's say you have 100 people and 25 of them have $100,000 in their retirement account and the other 75 have nothing in their retirement account. The mean would be $25,000. If you add all that up and divide it by 100, you'd get $25,000. Now, if I gave you that stat, I mean, that's pitiful, $25,000 for retirement. But if I gave you that stat anyway, you could say, well, you know, $25,000, at least they have something. But if you look at the median, 25 people have $100,000 in the bank in retirement, 75 have nothing, the median is zero. Because if you spread them all out and you start on the right side with all the zeros, and then you go up, and so it's going from smallest to greatest, you're going to have 75 zeros, 2,500,000. The median is at 50, and 50 is what? Zero, right? The first 75 are nothing, right? So that's why the median retirement account balance is zero in this country.
About like 401ks here.
401ks.
Like just savings,
yep.
Accounts.
401ks, IRAs, retirement accounts specifically. It says the report found that more than 100 million Americans that are of working age don't have any retirement account assets in an employer-sponsored 401k type plan, individual account, or pension at all. 100 million Americans. Well, we know just if the mean is zero, that means that at least half have nothing, right? Because you'd have to have zero up to the 50%, you know, up to the middle. So we know at least half, and 100 million Americans that are of working age, there's only 330 million Americans in this country. And I don't know how many are of working age, but, you know, this has got to be well over half, or at least half. But you have nothing, no retirement set up whatsoever. To make matters worse, 4 out of 5 working Americans were also found to have less than 1 year's income in their retirement accounts. So of those who do have a retirement account, 80% of working Americans have less than a year's income. How are you going to retire if you only have enough money to live for a year? I mean, that's crazy. Even those who are trying to save for retirement are failing to do so effectively, according to the study. It's stated that 77% of Americans come up short of even the most conservative retirement savings targets for their age, based on estimates that have them working until age 67. So 77 come up short, and that makes sense because most of them have zero, and zero is definitely coming up short, right? And then the article goes on to say, Diane Oakley, who authored the report, stated, quote, the facts and data are clear. Retirement is in peril for most working class Americans. When all working individuals are considered, not just the minority with retirement accounts, the typical working American has zero, zilch, nothing saved for retirement. She continued, quote, what this report means is that the American dream of a modest retirement after a lifetime of work now is a middle class nightmare. Even among workers who have accumulated savings in retirement accounts, the typical worker had a low account balance of $40,000. This is far off track from the savings levels Americans need if they hope to sustain their standard of living in retirement. So of people that do have it, if you took the average of people that have money in their retirement account, they have an average of $40,000. What can you live off of? How long can you live off of $40,000? A year? 2 years? Probably 2 years max. I don't think most people could live on less than 20 a year, probably. So, yeah, Americans have...
They'd have to be completely debt-free in most of them.
Well, and then you'd have to be completely debt-free at that. Yeah, I mean, most people, come on, you're going to live off of $20,000 a year? I mean, most people couldn't pay their mortgage and their car payment with that, probably. So, yeah, it's really astounding. So as far as the retirement account goes, I mean, there's different thoughts on this. When you get a 401k or IRA or a Roth IRA, there is always a chance where an account like that could get nationalized by the government or something, and they've done it in other countries, and you can't take it out until you're 59 and a half, I think is the age. So there are advantages to doing it with a retirement account and advantages to not doing that. The advantage is it grows tax-free. With a 401k, an employer-sponsored 401k, or an IRA, it is tax-free when you put it in, so you're not taxed on that money that you put into it, and then it grows tax-free, and you get taxed on it at the end. With a Roth, you pay the taxes before you put it in, and it grows tax-free, and I think you only are taxed on the growth of it, as far as I know, whenever you end up taking it out. My concern with the Roth would be they can always change the rules, and they tax you when you put it in, then they'll tax you when you take it out, right? So you do have that to...
Kind of like
to
property taxes?
Right. Yeah, exactly. Then you could also just do a personal investment account. You could just open up a TD Ameritrade or Charles Schwab or whatever account like that. I know TD Ameritrade is one that I have, which it went from Scott Trade, which got bought out by... What was it? Scott Trade, and then it got bought out by another one, and then they got bought out by TD Ameritrade, so the account keeps changing hands. But anyway.
Do you like fees every month or year or something?
No, it's great. They don't charge you anything. And now they don't even charge you fees on trades. Mm-hmm. So you could sit there and day trade and sell, buy and sell stocks all day long. You don't pay anything. It used to be $7 a trade, buying and selling. Now you don't pay anything. So you can trade all day, trade all you want. You don't pay a thing. Which unless you know what you're doing, and next to nobody does, I do not recommend day trading. That's a sure way to lose a lot of money for, I'm sure, the vast majority of people, because that's a specialized deal, and I wouldn't try it either, because that's a really good way to lose money. But anyway, it's important to save for retirement in something, whether it's an IRA or 401k or just in a personal account, even a bank account. I just wouldn't leave it in a bank account. Because inflation will eat it away, even modest inflation at 2 or 3%, that you'll lose half your money probably about 30 years, even at 3%. Your money will be worth half what it is 30 years from now, just with a modest inflation like that. So it's good to invest in something that you can get growth in. With a 401k, the advantage to that is that a lot of time your employer will match the funds, and that's free money. So if they'll match 100% or 50%, then that's all free. And so some of them, like maybe they'll match 50% up to 6%, which means that if you put in 6%, then they're putting in 3%. So it's not a bad idea to at least put the minimum in to get the full company match. So if they match 100% up to 6%, put in 6% or whatever. And then it's like getting a 50% or 100% return on investment for doing absolutely nothing. So that can be a good thing to do. And then if you don't end up working at the same company for a while, you can get that employee match, stay long enough to get vested, which usually I think it's, I don't know, a few years. Once you get vested, then that you get to keep the money your employer put into it. Then when you go, you can take that money, you can put it in an IRA. You can transfer it over to an IRA, and then it's yours and you have total control over it. The problem with a 401k is usually they're traditional investments, just conventional investments, which has been fine for a long time up until now. But if you think the market's going to keep going ballistic like it is, then yeah, just jump in the S&P and enjoy the ride. If you don't think that's going to happen, and I don't, then I wouldn't want to be in the U.S. stock market in my retirement account, especially if I was getting close to retire. If you're a long ways away, it might not matter. But anyway, the nice thing about having like an IRA is that you can, like I'm with Euro Pacific Capital, and they're very non-traditional, and they're invested in foreign stocks, foreign dividend-paying stocks, and good foreign companies, which you also benefit from a falling dollar, because when the dollar's falling, you're earning in their currency, and their currency is stronger, so it's like it's a double earning, really, because you're getting paid out in dollars. And then they invest a lot in precious metals and mining stocks and things like that. So it's not conventional, but it's been doing well. Peter Schiff and his company has been doing well for the last 5 years. He did pretty pitifully for the five before that, but seems like now's a pretty good time for that investment strategy. So anyway, but it's just important to, probably the most important thing is just put money away every paycheck. Put it away, do as much as you can, and try to get it in something that will at least outpace inflation. But be careful, because things are risky. And if you invest in gold and silver mining stocks, companies, just beware that, some of them are up like 300% since March. But if you'd have bought them in August and sold them in November, you'd have lost 33%. But if you bought them in November and held until now, you'd have made 50%. So, they're volatile. But in the long run, I think they're going to do insanely well. But that's just my opinion. So, take it or leave it. But you look at the charts.
Gold's the same way. I went back and looked. And like from 2007 to now, 1 year ago, lost 38%. In like 2009, 2010. So if you invested in 2007, but you had your sale at that year, you would have lost 38% of your investment.
Yeah, yeah. Just if you didn't.
Be real careful about that.
Yeah, if you'd have bought in 2011 and then sold in 2015, you'd have lost, a lot. You'd have lost almost half. But if you'd have bought in, say, 2015, now you would have made twice. You'd have doubled from 15 to now.
Like, for instance, say we invested then, and all of a sudden we really need the money, mm-hmm. and we had to sell the gold, we could have actually lost half our money because we need the money in the first place.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, it's possible,
so
yeah.
Big risk.
Yeah. Over time, gold is always going to perform like it does. When you look at it over the long term, gold basically just is a reverse of the value of the dollar. And as the dollar goes down, gold goes up. And as the dollar goes up, gold goes down, typically. So over the long term, it's not really not an investment. It'll just preserve your purchasing power. Gold mining stocks, like the companies themselves, that's more of an investment. But you got to have a stomach for that stuff because, You can make or lose as much in a day easily that it would take you a couple of years in a bank account to make. Easily. Now, if you get a stomach for it, doesn't bother me. Because
so is your best bet on that to invest in it and then just don't watch it all the time?
Right. Yeah. Yeah, because it's you want to look at like the big picture when it comes to that. And is the government going to keep spending money, right? Or the deficit's going to keep growing? If you think that's going to happen, then the value of the dollar keeps going down and the price of precious metals keeps going up. And when the price of precious metals go up, the companies that mine them can make a lot more money because they're selling the metals they're bringing out of the ground. So if you think that the government's going to keep growing, keep spending more, keep running deficits, then it's a good long-term investment. If you think all of a sudden they're going to get their house in order and they're going to cut the budget back and they're going to start running balanced budgets and all that, well, then, I mean, I'd be selling everything real fast because, yeah, that would not be a good investment anymore. So it depends on what your general worldview is, I guess, when it comes to that kind of thing.
And
how long?
You and I, okay, we might invest some for 10 or 15 years. But Carissa and Christine and them, they can invest in some for 30.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a big deal.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And that goes for any investment.
Yeah.
It's the same way with the stock market. Mm-hmm. If you'd have bought the stock market in 2008, you'd have lost 2/3 of your money. If you'd have sold it in whatever 2010, whenever it bottomed out.
So,
oh yeah, if you'd have bought it in the year 2000,
yeah,
and in the .com thing, you'd have lost a pile if you would have sold at the lows, right? So I mean, there's no investment that's going to be perfectly safe. And anybody, it always cracks me up when people say, "Oh, this is guaranteed 10% per year." Anybody that ever tells you anything is guaranteed, that they're lying to you, unless it's a guaranteed like 1% or something. But, yeah, I mean, you can guarantee that. But so anyway. But the important thing is just to start putting money away and do it as early as you can because you have time on your side, you know, whenever you do that. Yeah, I mean, if you're old, then it's another story. But when you're young,
that's where the statement,
it's a good idea.
If you're young.
Yes. So, as Proverbs 6:6 says, go to the ant, thou sluggard, consider her ways and be wise, because by doing so, first of all, we'll learn a good work ethic, because that little ant works like crazy. I mean, she works really hard. Secondly, we'll learn how to provide for ourselves. And then thirdly, we'll learn how to make hay while the sun shines and lay up wealth during our working years and that we'll be able to live on later on in life when we can't work anymore. So that takes care of Proverbs 6 and verse 8.